cannot believe you are early.
Alors là, tout en son jeu dans leur vie, ils abusent de l'alcool, de la marijuana, du LSD et d'autres genres de drogues similaires.
Quelle espèce de rat fumier et psychotique ose jouer cette chanson maintenant, à l'instant même? Quand je suis revenu à moi, l'atmosphère générale de Cuxac était trop pourrie. Trop étonnamment repoussante. Combien de temps étais-je resté allongé ici? Toutes ces marques de violence. Que s'était-il donc passé? Il était évident que cette chambre avait abrité la consommation excessive de toutes les drogues connues par l'homme à ce jour, et ce depuis 1544.
Confused about my identity, and maybe I am too. So my presentation is called Dances Embrace and Theories Talk, and it's about a conversation between two aesthetics. In my dissertation research, I ask questions about unstated hierarchies between dance traditions. And I'm at Temple University in Philadelphia, where I'm exploring a transnational and transracial view of women's dance history through Kenya Luo dance and Doris Humphrey dance in the 1930s. Their juxtaposition underlines the presence of a false hierarchy that places concert dance, in this case a Western form, at the higher end of the spectrum, and folk dance, in this case an African form, at a lower end of that spectrum. Using this juxtaposition as an example, I join a number of dance scholars who advocate an expansion of the shape of dance history and a conscious framing of dance traditions across categories, like American modern and world dance. This research paper is actually related to a related applied problem. And here I focus on a particular setting, which is my undergraduate class in anti-oppression and dance, where I created and performed a choreographed conversation between Humphrey and a form of Pan-African dance last spring. This dance material was drawn from kinesthetic data, including a reconstruction of a Humphrey partita, which I was reconstructing last spring and performed in London, and also a contemporary African technique called Mfundele, which was created from a number of dance traditions and was developed by Kariuma Welsh. I performed this conversation with a colleague of mine in front of my undergraduate students in this course that I mentioned, and we are both trained in African and modern techniques. So my research question in this particular research conducted last spring was based in three main questions, which were formed as a way to improve my educational practice. The first general question is, how can a juxtaposition of African dance and Humphrey dances in a conversation be used for anti-oppression and structural purposes? And can dance performance help students to move away from defensive or protective attitudes and deepen classroom discussions? And also, can it help students to see how their perceptions and attitudes may be affected by cultural constructions of the body? In this paper, I first will qualify my focus on racism and within this course, and then describe some uses of dance that I employed in the class to overcome such problems of divisiveness that sometimes occur in these classes. And finally, I will contrast the impacts of two very different dance performances. One is the one I mentioned, and another one is Tongue Smell Color by Brenda Dixon Gottschalk. So I draw from various forms of data for this research over this three-month period, including student journals, my own journals, the journal of the other dancer, who I've named P, and observations of videotapes of these performances and talkback sessions. So I need to make a couple of qualifications. One is that as a teacher of anti-oppression studies, I'm looking for ways to deepen these conversations in my classroom, particularly as this is related to anti-racism. And I'm interested in how dance can assist this process, helping us move away from defensiveness or opposition that sometimes characterize these discourses. So I believe it is necessary to move the conversation toward how students experience what Dills and Cooper Albright call the slippage between the lived body and its cultural representation. I define education as an active process of knowledge generation and a transactive co-experience between teachers and learners. Since some of my students may not be required to challenge oppression in their daily lives, I emphasize their embodied participation in dance class. And regarding how anti-oppression is addressed in the wider body of literature, I thus paid particular attention to interrelationships between instruction, knowledge building, identity, activism, and/or artistic expression. Now, Uzo Esonwane, a Nigerian scholar, has described both the United States and Canada as racialized nation states in which race can be quite hazardous. To raise questions about race and racism is not to address an abstract construct, but to intervene actively in a discursive field that is highly charged by past and ongoing grievances, but also by present investments. Essonne contests biological determinist and essentialist notions of race, referencing Anthony Appiah's arguments, where he expanded Dubois' what he called an uncompleted argument. Although Dubois never discarded completely the notion of essentialism as being connected to race, and his argument thus remains uncompleted, his developmental theories about race and racism were acknowledged as a historical precursor for those asserted by Appiah, who said that there are no races, and that where race works, it is a metonym for culture. So I agree with Essonne and Appiah that truth and knowledge change with cultural variation. And as Appiah elaborates, rather than a biological designation, what exists instead are communities of meaning, shading variously in tissue and various.